And you follow God in wholehearted obedience, and suddenly your entire world falls apart. When your deepest, most urgent prayers are met with silence, can faith survive? Like, those were the questions that Allan Emerson found himself asking, and does ask in his book, Luminous Dark. It's written out of the story of personal experience. Life was going well for Allan. He was pastor of a thriving church up north, head of 24/7 prayer and love on that. And he just met the love of his life, Lindsay. They'd been married only a few months, and that he would never have imagined that he would be nursing her through the final stages of cancer, and that he would be widowed, and he would be distraught, and his whole world falling apart. Where is God in our suffering? As coronavirus spreads around our world, it brings suffering and death much closer to the door than we would ever like it to be. We usually manage to keep those things at a distance, even from our thoughts, never mind from our actual reality. Where is God in our suffering? Well, Allan found that silence doesn't mean absence. He is present in our silence and present in pain. Where is God in our suffering? Well, he's here. He's right here. He's in our suffering. Christ suffered for us. When we come to the cross this Good Friday, that's what we find. At noon, we read in Mark 15, darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. And at 3 p.m, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? This is Jesus' cry of pain and anguish as he suffers on the cross. He takes up the words of Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, so far from the cries of anguish? My God, I cry out by day, but you do not answer. By night, but I find no rest. Where are you, God? Verse 1 of Psalm 22, the word for cries of anguish is actually the word used for a lion roaring. This is no neat and tidy prayer or request. This is a roar from the midst of pain. Where are you, God? Don't be far from me. Why do you not answer me? You know, Jesus the real sting of suffering is it's not misfortune nor the pain of it nor the injustice but the apparent God-forsakenness. Jesus felt the pain and knew the pain of Psalm 22. He suffered the shame that we read off here in verse 7. All who see me mock me, they hurl insults, shaking their heads. He trusts in the Lord. They say, let the Lord rescue him. Let him deliver him, since he delights in him. And further down as well, he's stripped of his clothes in verse 18. They divide my clothes among them and cast lots for my garments. Something that all the gospel writers allude to in their accounts of the crucifixion. He suffers shame. He suffers hostility from his enemies as well. Verse 13, we read, they're roaring lions that tear their prey, open their mouths wide against me. As they open their mouths to mock him, it's like they're animals ready to rip him apart. They're the predator. He is the prey. He suffers physically. Verse 14, I'm poured out like water. My bones are out of joint. My heart is turned to wax. It's melted within me. My mouth is dried up like a potsherd. My tongue sticks to the roof of my mouth. You lay me in the dust of death. David wrote these words hundreds of years before Jesus was on the cross on that Good Friday. And yet they capture his pain so closely. But it's not just Jesus' bones that are out of joint. Spiritually, he's out of joint with his Father. He's dislocated. He's far from his disciples, relationally, emotionally, and physically. He's just out of sorts. Do you know, we are joined up like that. We're interconnected. We can't separate out all these compartments in ourselves. And so sometimes we might feel that we're suffering spiritually or physically or emotionally, or we don't really know, because actually we're all joined up. We're just off center. We're dislocated and out of sorts. When we're suffering, we ask, where is God in this? And it can seem like he's just so far away. He's above it all. Well, the story is told of someone who climbs from a poor part of Rio and up to Christ and says this to him. The poor man speaks to the statue, "I've climbed up to you, Christ, from the filthy, confined quarters down here to put before you most respectfully these considerations. There are 900,000 of us down here in the Stroms. And you, Christ, do you remain here at Corcovado, surrounded by divine glory? Go down there into the favelas. Come with me into them and live with us. Don't stay away from us. Live among us and give us new faith in you and the Father." But the thing is, Jesus didn't remain in heaven, did he? He came, he took on our flesh. He came and he lived among us, sharing our sufferings in that way, but not only in that way, but actually taking our suffering on himself as he took on sin on the cross. He knew what it was to suffer. Jesus shares our suffering. Jesus knows what it is to suffer. "I understand," he says to us. But he also shows us how to suffer. Consider that Christ was perfect, that he never sinned. And so how he suffers is perfect. And so as he claims the words of Psalm 22, as he laments with them, as he cries out and he trusts, well, surely that's not just an option open to us then as Christians, but it's essential for us. It's what Jesus did. He shows us how to suffer. 1 Peter 2:21 says, "Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps." He leaves us an example that we should follow in his steps. Where I'm from, to lament or to complain is a negative thing. It's an attitude, well, it's not really prized. Rather, you get on with stuff, right? So you endure, just as Christ endured the cross. We love that. We bear with difficulty. That's seen as something positive. We endure suffering like a lamb going to the slaughter, like Jesus was silent. That's how he suffered. We love that. But sometimes we can fail to be honest with our emotions and to cry out when we're in pain, because Jesus always also does that. He roars, actually. So we too should lament in our suffering. In a coronavirus world, we can be quite sheltered from what's happening at the moment, actually. The suffering we have, well, it's indirect. But we can join with those who are suffering, those who are grieving the loss, those who are suffering from this. And we can lament with them and for them. Just as Jesus enters our suffering, we can enter the suffering of others and intercede in prayer. But also, we can feel out of shape. We can feel dislocated these days and knocked off center. Look, our suffering mightn't be as bad as others, yes. But God doesn't compare our suffering to others. There's not some kind of level of threshold that makes it suffering that we can bring to him. No, he wants us to give it to him. Christ suffers with us. And he shows us how to suffer, but Christ also suffered for us. In Psalm 22, it's the prayer of someone looking for deliverance. They're reaching towards it. And in Mark 15:31, we read Jesus being mocked. He saved others and he can't even save himself. But that's the very thing. He dies so that others can be saved and rescued. He suffered for us. In Mark's gospel, Jesus makes three passion predictions as he's going along with his disciples and speaking of what it means to be a Messiah. He says he will suffer. There's a key verse in Mark 10:45. He says, Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. And as he talks of it, he's saying he's suffering for many, for their good. And he's drawing here from the language of the servant song, the suffering servant of Isaiah 53, who would take on sorrow and suffering and even sin for others. 1 Peter 3:18 puts it like this: Christ suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God. He took what was ours, our sin. It's forsakenness that Jesus has on the cross. Well, it is more than a feeling. Really, it is an experience as he bears our sin, as he becomes sin for us, we read in 2 Corinthians 5. Well, he feels this forsakenness. And Peter Bolt says this: the experience of forsakenness is was part of life in this world under the shadow of death, because sinful humanity has been forsaken by God. It's a real objective thing. So it's no surprise then that we feel that objective thing in our subjective experience from time to time. We know what it's like to feel like that. Well, if we get some sense of what it's like to feel like that, imagine what Jesus felt on the cross. That's just what he endured for us. He felt that dislocation from the Father, from others, and even within himself, emotionally and physically, all because of sin. He took that on himself. And so as Jesus is on the cross, the Father, in a sense, he turns his face from the Son. He cannot look on his sin. It's this forsakenness. Well, it's real. But the unity of the Trinity, well, it can't be broken, can it? But I wonder, could we imagine that it's straining? That the Father and the Son, that there's just that dislocation and that pain taken into God himself. Because he loved us, he did this for us. Christ suffered for sin to bring us to God. In Mark chapter 15, verse 38, we read, as soon as Jesus died, he breathed his last. The curtain temple, elsewhere in the city, it was broken in two, showing that we no longer were forsaken, but accepted in God's presence. Psalm 22, there's sadness and suffering at the start, but by the end, there's a change in tone and mood, and there's a lift upwards. There's anticipated praise. The psalmist knows he will praise. And it spreads from one person to God's people, to the nations, to right across generations. And there's praise because there's this experience of being with God and with his people. Forsakenness is no more. As Jesus took our sadness and our suffering, he bears our sin so that suffering will be ended. And be no more. The story is told of the end of time, when billions of people are scattered and